Blog Talk Radio.
You know, Jerry,
what?
No music. The no music. What's
you talking
with
to
this?
Me? Are you
Why
talking
not?
To me?
Here on May 14th, 2014. Sorry you had to hear that, but they're screwing me up with this music every single week. It never starts. Something changed, and I have to change when I press the button, but I won't go on about that because you know what I really want to talk about? Yeah, I'm going to tell you whether you want to know or not. When you're in school, you'll read something sometimes that's kind of hard to understand, and your teacher will tell you, look, if you really want to learn something from an author who's very deep, you know, real deep, you have to be willing to struggle with the material. And I got to tell you, I'm willing to struggle. You all know that. You listened to the show before. I struggle. And I struggle. And I did struggle to penetrate an article I found on Forbes yesterday that is definitely, let me tell you, it's not for the uninitiated. And that means that a lot of you guys might not understand it either. So I'm going to help you out because, you know, I had to get help too. The resume strategy, she helped me because she's a genius and she understands everything. Her kids are very lucky. Anyway, this article said that recruiting can be divided into two techniques. There's candidate-centric recruiting, and then there's process-centric recruiting. Now, I got to warn you about something. Candidate-centric recruiting also seems to be called talent-centric recruiting, but you've still only got two types of recruiting. There's the candidate-centric recruiting and the process-centric recruiting. I hope you can follow me. I'm trying to make it real easy. Anyway, you want to know now what candidate, I'm having trouble today. Stick with me, please. You want to know what candidate-centric recruiting is. I know you do. Well, here's what it means. It means you build a strong employment brand, and that acts like a magnet, and it brings in tons of people who want to work for your company. Now, I'm going to tell you about process-centric recruiting. That means you got an application process that forces the applicant to prove she's qualified. She's got to check off lots of things on the application, and the applicants don't like that because it's too much work. But listen to this. If you've got a really strong employment brand, the applicants are going to be so sold on your company that they're going to be willing to submit to that process-centric grilling. They'll undergo it just because they love you so much. But look, if you don't have, I'm almost done. If you don't have a strong brand, they're not going to submit to what the author called heavy processing. So you have to lighten up and get a little more candidate-centric. And that means you get a blog and a Twitter account and you start to build your brand. You understand? But here's the scoop of the day. I'm almost done, but here's the scoop. I think this reveals what Josh Burson, the famous Josh Burson, meant when he was talking about the staffing-centric model versus the marketing-centric model. I'm going to guess, I'm not drunk, don't worry. I'm going to guess that the staffing-centric model is process-centric recruiting, and the marketing-centric model is the candidate-centric recruiting. But it's just a guess, so, you know, I wouldn't swear on it in court. And, in fact, you know, there's no swearing allowed on Jerry! What show is this?
This is the Recruiting Animal Show!
Okay.
Don't tell me what to do, man. It's my artistic expression. I practiced that one in the shower this morning, dude. I was on the mic.
Okay, tell me this, Jer. Are you talent-centric or process-centric?
I'm Jerry-centric.
Yeah, we know that.
All other centricacies are irrelevant in my world.
You know what? I think that means it's time to bring in the guest. He can tell us what. He can tell us what centric we want to be. David.
Yeah, man. All right. Let's do it.
Yeah. David Mendar.
Hey, guys.
Come on down.
I'm down. I'm here.
What kind of phone are you on?
Canadian, probably. Is my guess.
It's a Canadian phone.
He's not on a landline, Jerry. I won't go on about it again very long, but you're not on a land. Shame on you. Shame on you, okay?
You can't hear me?
Not as good as I should. Not as clearly as I should, okay? Can't you read? I send out the instructions all the time, but I'm going to leave it at that. Don't worry, audience. I won't get into it again, okay?
So now, as you know, Animal, I love when failed recruiters come on and teach us how to do it. Is this guy already a failure? It isn't.
Your phone's worse than his, Mike, so I don't know if
what was
you're
that?
The guy to... Right. You're the guy to talk. Okay, let's just lighten things up and get into it. Dave, you ready to sing the song?
Sure.
I'm going to go 1, 2, 3, and we're going to sing it. We're going to do Girlfriend by Avril Lavigne, a fellow Canadian, if anybody wants to sing along with us. Okay? 1, 2, 3. Hey, you. I don't
you.
Like your
I don't
girlfriend.
Like your girlfriend.
No way.
No
I think
way.
You need,
I
a,
think
new
you need
one.
A new
hey,
one.
Hey, you.
I
you.
Could
be your
I could
boyfriend.
Be your girlfriend.
Hey, you.
I know what you look. I know that you like me.
Really good. Okay.
This is the worst part of the show,
I needed an acoustic guitar there for sure, or a keyboard of some kind.
Get it. Jerry doesn't like
great singer with a great phone. I love it.
Okay. Demander. I'm Demander. Yeah, Demander.
Demander.
Oh, my Demander. Okay, I'm going to – yeah, he's on Twitter. He's Demandar, and he's the principal at a company called Curta, CURTA.ca. He's a partner or some kind of associate of our good friend, Rebecca Sargent. She arranged for him to be on the show. If you don't like him, blame her, okay? I couldn't say no. I'm going to introduce you. You know what? I'll tell you right now. I don't like the way you wrote your introduction on your website. I could do better. So I've just I've condensed it. You have a background in IT before you were a recruiter. Is that correct? Yes or no?
Correct.
Okay. 1996.
Yes.
You started recruiting at a company called CNC Global. That's a third-party recruiting agency, right?
Correct.
You stayed there for 5 years, and in 2001, you became a corporate recruiter. Am I right?
Right.
Since 2013, you're a trainer for recruiting teams at curta.ca. Right about that, too?
Correct.
Okay. Do you know
where's
anyone?
Where's that name come from, Curta? It's odd.
You know what a Curta is? If you Google it, you'll get a. It looks like a little coffee grinder or a pepper grinder, and it's an old-fashioned calculator. They are considered antiques, but they're for calculating. People use them for.
You know what? I think you should use a word that everyone understands right away, and they don't have to puzzle.
Yeah.
Not only that, but if you're going to teach modern technology, should you have a antique company name, something to think about?
Well,
yeah.
And you're
coming
out
blazing, aren't you, A-Stringer?
Well,
oh my goodness.
We're celebrating today, Jerry, and I can't wait to tell you why on the after show.
And it's going to be a heck of an after show.
Yeah, I'm glad you're going to hold it. Okay, so you want
to
talk about your
company.
Did
you tell me to hold it?
Did I tell enough about your company, or do you want to give a 30-second elevator pitch?
People will fill in the gaps as we go along.
Okay, so you also, I'll give you the plug now, you're also hosting a Headhunter Summit in Niagara Falls, Ontario, Canada, in October of this year. Stephen Nahez is one of the presenters, and he is very good, a witty, articulate thinker. I've watched both of
spammer.
His webinars.
Witty, articulate spammer.
And October 3rd and 4th, it's at headhuntersummit.com. I like your URL. I told you what I don't like, but I love that. Headhuntersummit.com, that's great. Okay, now
awesome.
You say all
but
of our...
By inviting Nahas, it just became spammersummit.com, but go on, please.
All of our, enough, Mike. coaches, you say all of our coaches are top billers. Why did they become coaches then instead of staying as top billers in third-party agencies?
Some of them are still billers. Some of them are still working a desk. We just, because of our model, they're able to do a couple of programs a month. They're not full-time.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still practicing their trade, and they can come in and they can teach about, social media,
okay, I understand that. I understand.
Sourcing, et cetera.
They're part-timers. Why would someone leave a big billing desk? What does big billing mean?
At least $250,000 to $300,000. That would be a minimum for a big billing desk.
So you're earning
at
yourself
minimum.
Take home $250,000. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Why would someone leave that to be a trainer? Do trainers make a lot of money?
They're not leaving it. They're not leaving it. They're sharing their skills in
okay,
certain
well,
areas
feel,
to
okay,
well, to help. Yeah. They're
okay.
not leaving.
But
it.
Are they not competing
though.
With the people they're training by still working a desk?
Sure.
So I want to bring a trainer into my company
Mike,
that's competing
Mike,
against me?
I don't
me?
See that as a problem. Mike, that's not a problem. Let me just go on to the next
really?
Question.
That's not a problem?
No, because
some of them are
must be different
a lot of them are
different
they're independents. They don't work for a brand. They're independents. They don't work for a brand. They work for themselves. So they
work for
no
a brand.
There.
Is that a new name for a company?
Yeah.
For sure.
That's what
I'm just wondering. I'm just keeping up. This is a global phone call. I mean, I'm just here in Indiana wondering what's trendy,
Look, let me get to the next question. You say our rookie recruiter graduates quickly become top performers. And I told you, if you're going to say something like that, you've got to have stories to prove it.
Well, I got lots of stories. I mean,
tell me a story about a rookie recruiter
okay.
graduate who quickly became a top performer.
So, Nadia, she had a sales background, never been a recruiter before, had a sales background, came in, did her, after graduating our rookie recruiter class, had her first bill in less than 30 days from someone that she actually headhunted. She's on track right now. She's about $70,000 in for her first 6 or 7 months. So not
anybody
bad
else?
For her first year.
Uh-huh. Anybody else? Anybody else?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Name one more person.
One more person. Young guy, Steve in Texas, came into the industry, never recruited before, was thrown in headfirst into an engineering recruiting firm where the first job he was given to work on was a purple squirrel. Steve went out and...
I hate that phrase.
Thank you.
I'm having flashbacks to watching television at 2 o'clock in the morning.
You know what?
So,
I want to hear
I'm having flashbacks to watching TV at 2 o'clock
story.
In the morning.
What was the purple squirrel? What was the title? Because I have a question for you later on about it. I'll ask it right now. What was the purple squirrel?
It was a bridge engineer in a geographic location that was pretty much nobody wanted to go work in.
Uh-huh.
And... So Steve
Toronto?
Went off and worked his butt off and brought in 160 net new candidates and had three interviews with the client who promptly blew up each one of the candidates. So they realized that this was really not a fillable thing. Steve has actually moved on to another agency because of the model in there, and he's now more successful.
Okay,
so he came in
and got a purple school order, but he didn't fill it, right?
Right. It turned out to be pretty much more than a purple squirrel. It was more like an albino giraffe. But
okay, but you know what?
I love these success stories.
Yeah, but there's people who say, our good friend, Jerry's particular friend, Julia Stone, out in Wisconsin, she says, I don't want your purple squirrels. I don't want to waste my time looking for a needle in a haystack.
Right.
Other people say, hey, give me your hardest to fill job order. Which do you think is the best
strategy?
I think your story indicates that you don't want the hard-to-fill jobs, really, do you?
Who, me or my candidate?
Dave, you, a recruiter. You means a recruiter in this case, okay? A recruiter shouldn't go in and ask, give me your hardest-to-fill job. That's not a good idea, is it?
No, absolutely not. That's a, that's not our approach. That's not what was successful for me. And over 18 years, I've learned that taking an approach where working with the client to figure out exactly what the fillable role is, as opposed to giving me something that's going to, you know, churn up 40 or 80 hours of my time, and then realize they filled it with an internal person, or they decided to go with something else, or their strategy changed. It's a time waster, and I don't touch them.
No, no. The point is, there, it's too hard to find that person. You don't want to take, you waste time, you know, on a job that might be unfillable, right?
Okay. Unfillable is a pretty vague.
Okay, let me move on then. You said that your favorite program is candidate marketing because it only takes a half a day and it has the greatest impact immediately. You want to explain that?
Sure, I'll give you an example. I'll give you a story right away. So we went out and worked with an agency here in the Greater Toronto Area. They have about 25 recruiters. They do 360 desks. And we spent a day with them going through this because we went on site and did all of their team all at once as opposed to our traditional WebEx half day. And we went through the program. We talked to them, went through all the roadblocks and really got to the deep end of it, making sure that they all understood what was going on. We did a follow-up 2 weeks after the class was finished. And they generated $40,000 in net new revenue through our candidate marketing class.
Yeah, you know what? I don't call that a story.
Wait, in 2 weeks?
In 2 weeks, yeah.
From the time that they were in there, 2 weeks later,
yeah,
they wrapped up $40,000 in placements.
Correct.
Really? That's a pretty quick turnaround.
How many people? We're not talking about one person, though, Jerry. We're talking about a whole group of people.
Yeah, we're talking about 20 recruiters.
Yeah.
What would they have done without the training? Zero? I mean, what was the baseline?
Oh, they were making placements. I mean, they're not an unprofitable organization, but they those are net new just from the candidate marketing process that we taught them.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, Jerry's got a good point, but here's the thing. If you told me a real story, it would be about little Joni, who is, you know, on the verge of getting fired because she hasn't picked up a job order in 6 months. And you tell
little
her.
Little Joni, I asked her.
Okay. Little kid. Don't talk like that, Mike.
My
little
goodness.
Kid. You know, I'm a little, no, you say, listen, kid, that's not the right way to do it. Do it this way. The next week she picks up a great job order. That's the kind of story I'm looking for. The one you want to write home to mom about, okay? That's not you gave the high view. Everybody likes giving the high view. That's no good. It doesn't really teach us very much, okay? That's a story.
David, tell them about Shannon last week.
I can talk about Jennifer down in Texas as well.
Go ahead.
Little Jennifer. Call her Little Jennifer, please.
Rebecca, you be a
little Jennifer down in Texas. Little Jennifer down in Texas has been trying to get into a client for, what was it, 8 months, Rebecca? And after going through our sales training class, landed the client.
Well, what made the difference?
So, and this is, it changed her perspective on her approach and how she was talking to the client. She wasn't going in there digging for wrecks. She was going in there trying to get the client to understand that she was there to help them meet their business goals through staffing. Because that's the key, is companies run on people.
You mean I can call someone? Hold on. My researcher, Greg Dergarian, he let me know before the show that you think there's a difference between a marketable candidate and a placeable candidate. So I have to reward his effort with asking you, what is the difference between a marketable candidate and a placeable candidate?
Hold it. A placeable candidate is a marketable candidate. Okay, go ahead.
And didn't we used to call it most placeable candidate?
An MPC, baby!
Yeah.
There we go.
Or a fee on legs, whatever you want to call it. It's, you know, that we've created a sort of a scientific number system, weighted number system, where we have a categorized set of skills and other features that basically we weight the candidate on a scale and we say, if it's this number, we should work with the candidate. If it's this number, we maybe work with the candidate. If this number, there's no way we're going to touch them. And we categorize them to that point where we're always at least have a marketable candidate and in most cases a placeable candidate.
So the marketable candidate and the placeable candidate might in fact be the same person. Is that right?
Right. You're always willing to market someone, but it's the person that's going to get you that placement fee.
So you'll market somebody, though. If you have no one else, you'll market someone who's probably a loser, but you think Mike hasn't had enough attention?
No.
You didn't explain very well the difference between a marketable candidate. You know, you said I grade them, and one of my grades is marketable, one of them is placeable. What is it that grades a person as marketable but not placeable?
Placeable would come down to the actual candidate themselves and their willingness to look at jobs in certain areas, their expectations on salary, their unique skill sets, also that the organizations they're willing to work for, and in what areas. You know, if they've got a great skill set, that'll be something that'll open the door and help me have a conversation with the client. But if it's someone who has that unique skill set and has all of those other things in place, they're definitely placeable. If they're ready to move, if they're ready to make a move, they're a placeable candidate.
So a marketable candidate might be someone who doesn't even know you're marketing them and, you know, isn't ready to make a move. Is that right?
No. It might be someone who's looking at networking or trying to connect with people in the industry.
So you'll market someone who doesn't want to move. Is that right?
No, I didn't say that. No,
Rebecca, help me!
A marketable candidate is somebody who's rated at a grade B. You know, they've got a unique skill set, but they're an interesting conversation to have with a hiring manager. A placeable candidate, a most placeable candidate, is the guy who is a stellar candidate. Everybody wants them, and you're gonna go the extra mile and make sure that you show them to every single candidate.
I hear you guys telling me, and I'm doing it for Greg. He came up with a good issue. You guys aren't doing a good job answering him, okay? A marketable candidate is a decoy, somebody you just use to get a job order and then really, you know, probably don't send out, or you send out as one of three candidates knowing that you're really trying to place the other two, not the guy you presented. Am I right or wrong?
Sounds right to me, Animal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're almost a decoy.
Okay.
Yes.
Anybody
Animal,
else
congratulations on explaining his business to him.
Yeah, anybody else want to ask?
It's about opening conversations and getting other orders, right? It's not just about securing the placement for the candidate. We're looking to open orders. So marketable means that we're showing people the quality of the person that we've got in our pipeline.
I understand this. I still don't understand the stuff about explaining to a hiring manager that I'm on their side and I want to help them find people. I mean, that's a given, okay? That's what that young Joni learned how to do, but I don't
little
understand.
Little Joni.
Yeah, little Joni, but
little young Joni, huh? We're getting
No. Let's
we're getting more descriptive there.
Let's not Jerry,
she was pretty hot. You should have seen her. She was hot, Jerry.
Mm-hmm. Does anybody want to ask the demander a question before me?
I would like to ask a question if you'll allow.
Not a nasty one, not a stupid one. Go ahead, Mike.
No, you cut me off earlier, and I thought I brought up a really good point, and it sounds like I'm busting chops here. I'm really not. But why would I, as an agency owner, in theory, if I was, bring you guys in as trainers and give you access to my people, my client list, my recs, all of that, when you guys are still practicing recruiters as well? I mean, there seems to be a level of trust there for a vendor that I don't know. How do you address that with your potential clients?
Well, first of all, I don't get access to your client list. I'm getting
well. If
I'm
you're
getting
helping
access
my if you're helping my recruiters market candidates and get recs, certainly you are.
No, that we don't sit down with a recruiter and say, here, show me the clients you're going after. We show them how to create a marketing plan to approach the clients that they're looking at. We don't get into who their clients are. That's it's an approach. It's not hand holding all the way. And if you're talking about why you would want to have us talk to your recruiters, is a long discussion because every team is different. There's a huge scale of skill level and experience in every single bullpen, and we work with the owners and the managers and even the owners, CEOs, et cetera, and really get into where they see that the skill gaps are, where they're falling down, and really to the end point of what's their target for the end of the year, what kind of revenue are they shooting for, what kind of growth are they shooting for. And we can talk to every single one of those points. If you're talking revenue, we can
you know
talk
what?
About
I'm sorry,
revenue.
Mike, did he answer your question? This stuff's not interesting to me.
Well, I have a part two, and maybe you'll find this more interesting. So you know, as someone that hires contractors, I know that you can't always trust contractors, and you said that you were using contractors as trainers. I mean, how do you know one of your contractors isn't going to see a really promising young recruiter and be like, listen, blow out of this agency, come work for me? Because that's what I fear the most in this industry is somebody stealing my recruiters.
Well, that's fear-based, and that's not what our business is about. We're not into stealing recruiters. You know, that's not our core business. Our core business is a training.
No, your core business isn't, but you said you use contractors and trainers who are practicing recruiting.
That's a question. They hire people they trust. I mean, you never know if someone's going to rob you.
Right. But not everybody's out to scam everybody. This isn't all New Jersey.
Well, yeah, maybe not in Indiana, but listen, we all know there's a different level of ethics in Toronto.
Yeah, I forgot you're in New Jersey, Boston, or Philadelphia. It's a great place. Okay, look. Dave, the demander, you say, we don't show you how to make cold calls or get job requirements. We show you how to earn a spot at the client's boardroom table. Tell me, what does that mean? I mean, it sounds like puffery to me. And I'm sorry, Rebecca brought you here. She knew what the show was like, okay?
I know what it's like. I've listened to you guys.
Okay.
Can I jump in here?
Yeah, who's that?
This is Mike Brand at Bright Move. It sounds to me like you're training on sales methodology. Is that right?
We're training a different approach.
A Sandler or a Myers-Briggs, just applying it to the recruiting side of things, correct? I mean, just putting some type of...
If you want to simplify it, sure, we're taking a different approach, yeah.
Got it.
Thank you, Mike.
So when I say my ultimate goal as a recruiter is climbing that Mount Everest of recruiting is sitting at the table with my client and while they're strategizing over their hiring. So, you know, a month before the requirement comes out, I'm with them talking about what the project is about, what kind of resources they need, where those resources are going to come from, how we're going to bring those resources on board. Are they going to be perm, contract, temp, third party, whatever? I help them strategize the best possible scenario to bring those resources in. I even help them write the job description. I help them understand from a social media standpoint. I work with their marketing people to help them get that message out to the industry about employee branding.
Okay, so that's
and
more
that,
like an HR consultant. Do you get paid on an hourly basis for that, or is that all just prep to have them give you the orders?
Well, what that gives me is a client who's pretty much exclusive to me. Right, someone who trusts me and calls me when they need advice. I get phone calls 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night. I'm sitting on my back deck barbecuing, having a beer, and I get a phone call from a client. You know, they want
to
talk about.
You know, I play cards with a guy. He's a plumber, and he gets those calls as well. Usually, it's like the toilet overflowed or the pipes froze. I can understand that. Why can't this guy call you during business hours?
Because he's in IT and he works a 14-hour day. And by the time he's done, he's in his car and he's driving, and now he's got time to think.
Okay.
Now
you
want to because he is a plumber and he's shoveling, you know what, and they got to call him when they have an emergency.
Okay.
That's right.
You want to tell us about the skills gap. Now, I don't know anything about it. Go ahead.
So I saw this article written by, I'm trying to remember the gentleman's name who does recruiting blogs.
Matt Charney.
I can't remember his name.
Charney, Little Matt. Little Matty.
So he wrote an article talked about the skill gap, and he said the recruitment industry had a big gap of skills, and I was...
Mute!
Hold on a second. Can we knock it off with the
Lord.
Typing, please?
Yeah, what the heck is that?
Please.
You can type, just don't put your mic in front of it, okay? Come on.
Somebody doing that on purpose?
No, that's just... They're stupid on the show, okay? They're not tech... They're technophobes. They're great.
They
gotta
be from Toronto.
They're great audience. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So
go ahead.
This is an opinion of mine, right? So you guys jump all over me if you want. I'd love to hear your feedback because, you know, he wrote an article about the skill gap in recruiting, and I jumped all over. I'm thinking, oh, trainer skill gap. Great. I'm going to read it. And he wasn't really being nice to the industry in a whole, talking about how there's no certification. People come in with training. They're all over the place, et cetera. To some degree, that's correct in some areas. But what I got out of that was an epiphany. It's not about skill. You know, everyone's smart, They're people, you know, they work with people. They're aggressive. We're a great industry. It's the accountability gap. It's not a matter of how good you are. It's how you're being held accountable for what you're doing.
Okay, you told me you got a story about this. You told me you got a story about this.
I got a story for you.
I got to remind you about something. This show is infotainment. You got to be entertaining as well as informative, or no one's going to listen. So try to make it a little more fireside chat or something like that. I don't know what to call it, but you know, liven it up. And you got Rebecca tag teaming you. If you got a problem, say, Becky, help me, please. Okay, go ahead.
You know what, Animal? I got a suggestion. You guys are both in Toronto. Why don't you guys go to Starbucks and have this conversation and let us have a show?
He's not in Toronto. Okay, somewhere in the general area. Just like Rebecca's not in Toronto. Okay, Mike, you're the toughest caller. You won't leave the guy alone. You're attacking him every step he takes. Maybe it's just making him nervous, okay?
Nah.
Well, because you know how I feel about people that leave recruiting to go teach us how to do it.
Yeah, well, you keep saying you left recruiting.
You bailed. You spammed.
Recruit on positions every single day. What are you talking about?
I haven't left recruiting.
Speaking of recruiting, right now I'm going to hit the send button on a candidate I'm sending to my customer right now.
Five times he hasn't left recruiting. That's why you accused him of stealing his client's business, okay? You can't have it both ways. Now tell us the story.
Yes, I can. I'm from New Jersey. I can have it any
way
I want
to. Mike, let me go on with the show.
Boom!
Wreck it, okay?
Boom!
Don't wreck it. David.
I'm doing send-outs right now, people. I am like hands-on, baby.
David for Jerry.
Admiral, aren't you glad I'm back?
I'm not sure, Mike.
I am.
Okay, Demander. Okay, first of all, let me tell everybody that my guest is David Mandar, M-A-N-D-A-R. On Twitter, he's at D-M-A-N-D-A-R. His company is called Curta.ca. You've never heard what a Curta is, so you won't know how to spell it. I'm going to tell you, C-U-R-T-A.ca. And he's a trainer for recruiters. And his partner is our wonderful friend, Rebecca Sargent. And she is on the line as well. So he's going to tell us a story now about something about the skill gap, right? What was it? Tell us a story, whatever you were talking
accountability.
About.
Accountability. And we talk to recruiters daily, and we talk to business owners daily. And it's incredible how a lot of people just don't get it. You know, talking to a manager about how he keeps his team accountable. He says, oh, it's easy. I tell them I need 100 phone calls a day, and I want to see 20 candidate interviews in the office every week. And I ask them, how is that driving any money to your bottom line? It's in my mind, it's just busy work. And I said, why don't you just measure how many times they come in and how many sendouts they're getting on a weekly basis and drive to that. And there was no accountability. He didn't measure all the right stuff. I was talking to a senior salesperson at an agency here in Toronto, and I was asking him how he did his lead generation. He couldn't tell me. He gave me every answer in the book that was basically deflecting what he was doing. He was comfortable. He had inbound leads coming in. He didn't have to do any outbound calls, and nobody measured anything in his office. So he had his feet up all day. There was no accountability, and that's a general statement throughout our industry. When you're not held accountable and you're making enough money to be comfortable, you're not going to go out on a limb and you know, expand your client base or expand your candidate base because you don't have to. You don't feel like you have to. And no one's
holding you accountable. Why did this guy bring you in if he's doing okay then? If he's satisfied with his current standard of revenue, why would he even bring you in?
He didn't bring me in. His boss brought me in.
Oh, I see. The boss. Mm-hmm. Company there.
Yeah.
So
for the record, he did say here in Toronto.
What's that?
Animal, for the record, he did say here in Toronto.
Sorry, Mike.
Dude, it's all Toronto, man.
Yeah, okay.
I'm outside of Toronto.
So what did you do? What did you do, Dave? How did you solve that problem? Did you get that guy fired?
No. We're in conversations with the management of the organization about measuring and accountability and everything else. That's part of
I just want you to know that the little big man of HR, Matt Charney, is actually listening, and he knows that you read his article and thought it was wrong, okay? There you go.
I didn't say it was wrong. I said I disagreed with some parts of it. So, okay, but there are some things in there that do ring true.
Wrong, and I think he's a dummy, and I'm never going to read his stuff again. Okay, I don't think he's a dummy, but you might. Okay, now look, I still can't figure out how do you get yourself to be sort of the at the table. You know, if I've been reading these HR tweeters for, you know, years on end, and they're always saying HR wants to get a seat at the table. HR wants to get a seat at the table. They can't get a seat at the table, but you, the outside recruiter, the third-party recruiter, thinks that he can get a seat at the table. How do you do that? You didn't tell us. All you did, you said, I can get you a seat at the table. How do you do that?
It's a process, and it doesn't happen overnight. Sometimes it takes a long time, and sometimes you get there, and sometimes you don't. It's
okay,
it's
so that's a strategic
it starts,
goal.
Well,
that
let me finish. Let me get
not
to where
tactical.
I'm going. Let me get to where I'm going. So, first conversation with a hiring manager, I'm talking to them about a job requirement, and I start asking them questions like, "So, what kind of questions are you going to ask the candidate so I can further qualify this job?" If they can't answer a question like that with me, I start having yellow flags going off in my head and saying, this manager is going to blow up my candidates, and I start working with that manager to help them. I prep them for interviews, and then I get to the point where they see value, and I ask permission. I bring my candidate to the interview. I'm in the lobby. I'm waiting. The manager comes out. I'm shaking the manager's hand again, and I'm getting myself closer and closer to the interview. I get myself in an interview so I can give feedback, constructive feedback on the candidate, interviewing.
Stop. You're in the interview with the candidate?
Yeah.
How do you do that? How do you get yourself in there?
I ask.
What?
But I add value. I add value before I do.
What do you say?
I ask. I say, based on our conversation, I would love to sit in on this interview with my candidate to give you some feedback on the kind of questions that you're asking and your process.
And so when you're
I would
in the interview,
so love to kick you in the ass and out of my office at that point.
When you're in the interview.
Sure, if you want to.
Hold on. When you're in the interview and the interviewer, the hiring manager, whoever it is.
I've got one quick question.
Go ahead.
Mike, have you ever actually kicked anybody's ass?
Actually, I was an angry young man, Jerry.
Okay.
Let me say, Jerry, save that for your show, okay? I want to get a clear answer, and I was just about to get one. So if you're in there in the interview, Dave, and you don't like the question the interviewer asked, you say, hold on a second, just like I'm doing now.
I don't say anything. I'm a fly on the wall, and I'm there to critique, and I have a conversation with the manager afterwards. I don't have any interaction with the interview.
Okay, but so you know what? So he could screw up the interview with you just sitting right there. Is that right?
Yep.
What's the point of that?
It's less likely that they're going to do it with me sitting there, but if they do, it'll be the last time that they do that because the critique going forward, right? This is the relationship I'm building is trust and value add for them to talk to me as opposed to Joe down the street who's just looking for wrecks. Right.
Does anyone ever say thanks, Dave, but I don't need you in the room?
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of managers who've been around for 15, 20 years truly believe that because they're a good manager, they're a good interviewer.
Mm-hmm.
And
so
it takes me a little bit longer to get them to understand the value that I bring as a quote unquote professional interviewer. And I show that through prep, and I show them through the quality of candidates I'm bringing to the table. And if it's hit and miss, I tell them, you know, Joe, it's hit and miss, man. I can't nail this down without, you know, my candidates telling me you're asking them questions like this that have nothing to do with the job requirement that you've given me.
Oh, so you're only going in after there's a proven problem. You're not saying, look, I want to come in. And Bill says, no, Dave, I do it myself. And you're saying, hold on a second, Susie. I think you need me, and here's why, okay? You don't push to get yourself in there from the start.
No, I do. I do, but if they don't let me come in, then, you know, then obviously the problems or the difficulties that arise.
True or false? I read this yesterday. A recruiter needs to genuinely like people. True or false?
I think it's true.
I think it's false. Why is it true?
I agree.
False.
I agree.
Come on, you gotta like people.
No, you don't.
You don't like, if you don't like people, how can you do this job?
Why not?
You think a good veterinarian doesn't like animals?
Not necessarily.
I see every person with a tattoo of a dollar sign on their forehead.
That's right.
How I could, that's how I do the job without liking people.
That's why you got out of recruiting, Mike.
I'm not out of recruiting, Jerry.
You're back in?
Hey, we
never left. Animal,
gotta,
can you ask him if he delivers donuts to his clients?
Oh, cupcakes.
Cupcakes, sorry.
Sam's last year.
We had a very successful guest. She's a very successful recruiter. She takes fancy cupcakes when she goes to visit them at the office there. Hold on, but we got a lot of people on the line. Can anybody else chime in? You don't have to say your name or anything. Do you think a recruiter has to genuinely like people, whatever that really means? Go ahead. Anybody want to say yes or no?
No.
I don't think you have to like people. I think you have to be curious about people, but I don't think you have to like them.
That's
sorry,
part
but that's absurd. That's ridiculous.
Okay, next question. Okay, here's one.
What does that even mean, like people?
I don't know.
What is a person who doesn't like people? What do they do? They're accountants.
Introverts. They're introverts.
Well,
they like
mass murderers.
Right.
Well, let me give a real
one. That's the most top ridiculous question of the show. Do
no,
you have
listen,
to like
I
people?
I often picture my candidates naked. Does that play into this anyway?
Okay.
That says a lot about you.
Here's another one from the same article, Dave. David Mandar. Many recruiters don't build relationships with clients and candidates, and that's a mistake. But I remember we were talking once before, and Jerry said recruiting is about who you can find, okay? And it doesn't depend on who you know. So it's not a matter of knowing a bunch of people who are good for the job when you pick a job up. It's about finding people you don't know. That Scott Boren said on Facebook, I mostly place people I've never spoken to before. So is recruiting a transactional game, a transactional business, or is it this relationship business? You have a comment about that, Dave?
Absolutely. Whatever works for you. I mean, if you're sitting in your basement all by yourself and you've got a process that works and you make enough money to keep yourself happy, you don't have to like people. You don't have to love people. You can look at this as a transaction. You can have a dollar sign printed on their forehead. However you want to approach it, if it works for you, great. Go for it.
No, that's a different. That's the last question.
Can I ask what's wrong with
what
sitting in your basement? I hear that phrase a lot, and as a guy sitting in my basement, I wonder why the stereotype here. I mean,
yeah, what's wrong with that?
I have lights and everything, and I've got a computer, and I even have a window.
Are you still sitting on a milk crate, Jerry, or have you got a chair?
Oh, Aeron chair, baby.
I'm on the milk.
The best crate. You can buy.
Okay.
It's got a big rip in it, though.
I don't look at recruiting as a transactional thing. It is, you do transactionally, fill things in the end. But the relationship that you're building when you're picking up that phone and talking to people is important, whether it's short or not. I mean, the relationship I have with a contractor could be 3 days long. I'll find them out through my sourcing, have a quick phone call with them because all they're concerned about is availability and rate and, skill set. So my conversation is a little bit briefer than with a perm candidate, and my relationship, might only be 2 or 3 days long. And that now if they sign that contract, now my relationship, now I'm going to go have coffee, now I'm going to go meet with them, now I'm going to go see them at their work site, and now the relationship goes on.
The question here was to make the placements. You don't have to know those people before you start recruiting on the job. It's not like you've got a big database. Here's the thing. And some hiring managers, this is the way they hire their recruiters. They want a recruiter who's got a huge database of people they know in their business. Now, is that the best recruiter to hire? The people they've already spoken to. Is that the way to recruit? The Scott Boren says he mostly places people he's never spoken to before. Which is it?
Depends on your sourcing model. You can start from scratch
let's forget
every day
that
if
question.
You want to.
Forget it. Lou Adler.
Hey, Jerry.
There's a question for me.
I'm leaving until your show. I'll be back in 15 minutes.
Goodbye.
All right.
Okay.
Let me kind of sum that up, though, Animal.
No, we
place people that we don't really know with customers that we do know. Hey. Few of us make a placement with a customer we don't know. Let's be real.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
Come on, man.
Okay, Lou Adler said a job.
I know your customer.
Lou Adler said a job ad has to capture the candidate's inner hero, meaning her aspirations. So I'm transferring that over to the pitcher.
Inner hero. Where do you dig this crap up?
Lou Adler.
That's pretty airy-fairy.
Lou Adler's on LinkedIn, and you're not, okay? He's a big shot on LinkedIn. And so if you're pitching a
Did
job...
Did Lou Adler just make a placement 15 minutes ago?
I don't know.
That's my question. Because I did.
Or if you're calling somebody, full call, about a job, you have to address their inner hero. Dave.
I don't even know what that is, inner hero. What is that?
Their aspirations, the kind of person they want to be, their goal in life, you know, when they're the star.
Well, you know, we break all those things down to hot buttons, right? You know, what are you looking for? What you know, well, I want more money. Well, what does that mean to you? What's more money mean to you? And get it all down on paper and use that throughout the process to remind the candidate why they're going through change.
Okay,
it's
not a matter of romance and excitement and emotion. Is that what you're telling me? Because that's a valid response to the question I asked.
Yeah.
You're not trying to get the candidate. Let me finish, please. You're not trying to get the candidate all excited emotionally. You want them thinking rationally about what they're looking for. Is that right?
Yeah, you give them the information that they need to make a decision.
Yeah, okay. So you're not trying to stir them up emotionally and get them excited about the position. That's different, you know. Make it sound exciting. Everybody's saying the job orders aren't exciting. You know, just because they got the facts, you got to glam them up, make them seem glamorous. You don't really have to do that. This is a business transaction, okay? You're not going on.
Well, you do have to be more marketable these days. You do have to attract people's attention, and you do have to you know, have a hook of some kind to bring them in.
Give me an
from
example.
From an organizational
Give me an
standpoint,
example.
You got to.
Give me an example.
You got to. Go ahead.
Give me an example. No, you go ahead. Give me an example. Don't just talk. Prove it.
Well, look at all. If you go on the boards and look at all those job descriptions out there, they're bland. They're just a list of things. They don't talk about the organization, the career path. You know, sometimes they mention gym on site or you know whatever, but they don't get into the soft part of it. And I guess maybe that's what you're talking about, the inner feelings of this, and getting people excited. When you get on the phone and you're talking to someone, and you say, well, okay, so this new job will cut an hour commute out of your time. What does that mean to someone? That's huge. Someone with children now has an hour, 2 hours more of their day. That's huge. And they will get emotional about that. That's the point.
I'd like to interject. I recently announced that I made a placement, and Lou Adler probably didn't. she accepted our offer because it was about a half an hour shorter drive time, though the yearly compensation was about $20,000 less and far less vacation time. So I'm just throwing that in there.
Yeah,
that's what we call a real-life, current,
that's a
today
example.
I want to throw something in there, though.
You don't have many of them, Animal.
A lot of companies out there oversell, though, their brand and end up having somebody who leaves in 2 months. You know, if you oversell the company culture, you're going to lose these people as soon as you get them hired.
And that's why you work with hiring managers to do two things. One is, yes, to market out, but also to clean up their process and get them into these situations. I had the luxury of working 10 years on the corporate side as well as on the agency side. So I sat in the boardroom and I talked with HR, I talked with marketing, and we talked about retention. You know, that's part of what we do with our clients. You don't have to hire for that client if they're a piece of crap. Don't put your candidate in there and expect them to stick, right?
But you're working with clients, hiring clients on their retention now?
Sometimes I have those conversations.
Wow, that's huge. That's a big engagement there.
Well, I've done it before. I was the recruitment manager at Fairfax, or MFX was part of Fairfax in the GTA here, and it was pretty much a sweatshop, and I had to work with them really hard. Well, first of all, fire off half the vendors that were in there because they were crap, but really get down to the point where it was a better place to work. It was becoming a destination employer.
You know what, Dave?
I got about
Dave,
halfway through it. Yeah.
Dave, let me
and I'm going to jump in there and
say, no. I get me
what
first,
are we talking
okay?
about?
Hold on a second. Last week we had an IT recruiter, and he said he placed somebody at a company, and he didn't know it was a sweatshop. That caused a lot of
That's
problems. Okay, how could you find out that the client is a sweatshop? How do you figure that out?
You got to do research. I mean, you have to look at the back door and watch the people running out. You know, you talk to people.
No. Make it a little more granular for me, okay? Not just general. How do I do that? How do I look at the back door? I mean, are people going to tell me on Glassdoor? I don't think so. Okay, they're not going to tell me on LinkedIn. I worked at this company. I left because it was a sweatshop.
But usually,
how do I find out?
Usually, you're recruiting around in that marketplace anyway. So you're interviewing
yep.
people that have worked there. You hear
yep.
things. People talk, animal.
Yep.
You know what,
yep.
Jerry?
I'm interviewing candidates in
did that make too much sense for you, animal? What would I know? I'm just sitting here in my underwear in my basement.
You know what, Jer? A few years ago, I worked on a job in the flavor business, and every person I spoke to said I would never touch that company with a 10.
There you go. Right there.
And
so you know they're a sweatshop or whatever.
They said there's a maniac running the company, and they told me stories about how crazy the guy was.
I heard of a company, and the guy like wore like his sailor's captain's uniform to all meetings.
No, but Jerry,
and needed to be addressed as, I believe, admiral.
Okay, Jerry.
They were a flavor company too.
Let me.
But would you not place somebody there just because somebody crazy works there?
No, you got to find somebody and talk to them about, hey, this is what this place is like.
Yeah. Dave,
you know,
Dave,
you need to talk about it on the front end. Again, what would
Jerry,
I know?
I called Jerry and talked to him about that company, and he didn't tell me don't work that order. Okay,
You just have to know what your product is, man.
Okay, so
God, this
the
is
way
so
you
simple,
find,
people.
The way you find out, though, Dave, there's no way to find out in advance, is what you're telling us. If it's a sweatshop,
no, I said
you
can't
find
out
after you take the order and you talk to people in the market. Then you call up and say, "I'm not working for you." Is that right?
People hate. Yeah, most is great.
If I'm going out and actually doing biz dev and come across a potential client, I'm going to research that client before I take a job order.
Yeah, okay, but I want to hear Greg. Greg, who is it?
No, hold on a minute. Wait a minute. So you're going to – okay, you're marketing somebody. Your BE candidate that you're just using as a conversation starter.
Yeah.
And the customer says, hold on. Customer says, yes, we want you to recruit for us. Here's a job order. You then say, well, hold on. I now need to research you a little bit. No, you
no,
don't. You
I
take
think,
the job order. Can we tell the truth? You're not researching every company before you make a phone call. Come
yes,
on.
You are.
It's just
on.
Us.
Yes, you are.
I got a mortgage.
No, you're not.
Yep, you are.
Oh, research by Hell going no. to Monster to see how many jobs they have posted?
No.
Nope.
And I'm going to jump in here because your biggest problem with your salespeople out there today is that they're not doing their research. They don't know enough about the client before they get in front of them. And everybody's complaint is they go in with a script. 90% of what we are teaching through our programs and where we're seeing the success is choking everybody up at the front end and saying, here's a list of 20 questions you have to answer before you pick up the phone and call that client.
Great. So now people are paying you to teach them the paralysis through analysis way of never making a call because you've not done researching yet.
That's
wrong.
Not true. Because
you're wasting your time on the phone if you're just calling people that are going to waste your time, right? You do your research, and if it takes an hour a day, you do an hour a day of research, and the other time you're on the phone. It's the sharpening axe principle, right? You do a little bit of work up front, and it shortens your workload. And I would rather find out ahead of time that an organization is going to blow me up and blow my candidates up before I even make a phone call.
So you've got 20 things that you want to know about a company before you're going to make a marketing call?
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, okay. Meanwhile, I've already called them, got the job order, and I'm working on a send-out. Good luck.
And well, good luck if you're placing someone into a sweatshop and they fall off out before the agreement.
Can we stop saying sweatshop? What is sweatshop?
Yeah, it's crap. There aren't. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
No, the guy sweatshop. Last week, Mark Cunningham.
It's a general term.
And I'll tell you after I can post it on Twitter. He's got a good blog description of what the sweatshop was and why it didn't work out. But the thing is, everybody, and Dave Mandar, you said find out that it's a sweatshop. But before we said you find out by talking to people. How do you find out in advance of calling people for the job? How do you find out if it's a sweatshop in advance? I still don't know. Should I leave that hanging, or are you going to tell me?
Well, I answered that already. You're talking to candidates who are interviewing out in the industry. You know who the competitors are in your field if you're in a specific industry. You know who the providers are. You know who.
Okay,
who's
so you're
good
saying you're saying I already have relationships in that business, that field, and I call them and check out a company before I call them. Is that what you're saying? Let's make it real clear.
Yeah.
You know Dave, who works in that law. Okay.
How does that take place, though? What? Can you just, because I want to learn. I'm here to learn. So you call somebody and you're researching a company. What do you say? Hey, what do you know about animal company? How's that go?
Sure.
Before every marketing call. You call all the people that you know that may know something about some other company to fill out these 20 questions before you call and make your marketing call?
Can I jump in? Am I allowed to jump in? Because we did this. We just did this. So before we had a client who called us out of the blue and said, would you come in and see us? And I knew them through market reputation. And David and I both went back to our network and called people that worked at that company and asked them, this company's asked us to come in and speak with them. Could you give us some insight on, what the problems they might be having are? And by doing that market research, we were able to go in and explain, this is what we're hearing from the marketplace, and this is where you're seeing your attrition, because we talked to the people that have left their organization and done exit interviews on them. How much more powerful is that?
Yeah, but these are recruiters.
Recruiters
are running wild all over the place. We're talking about companies' IT departments or their accounting department or their engineering group. You're not going to find a bunch of people that have experience with that company, so you can do your research before you make your call.
The other day.
No way.
Yes way. Did it with an IT company. They had let a salesperson go, and they called me to fill a sales role, and it was, what were the problems?
And did you take the job order?
Yes, I did.
And so, but before you took the job order, you called everybody to research them, right?
No, I called the last guy that had the job.
Oh, God, before the show's over, hold on. I got Greg wants to talk from Minneapolis. Or somebody in Minneapolis. I wasn't sure. Who is it there? Still on the phone, Minneapolis?
Hey, yeah, Animal, what I wanted to say about the use of the term sweatshop is that I started my career software in a sweatshop. It was great because people kicked my ass all day long. If people want to go from $30,000, $40,000 a year and make $100,000, they're going to have to really, get kicked around in a sweatshop. So why this term? If you just want to collect a paycheck, then don't put that person at a sweatshop. But I don't like this term sweatshop.
It's
okay, I'm going to look that up.
But it just says a bad place to work. That's all.
Okay, that's good enough. Okay, you know what? Jerry, tell me if I'm right that the show got better when Mike Astringer left.
That's only a coincidence, but we'll go with it.
It's pretty exciting for me for the last 20 minutes.
Turned out all right.
I don't know. It could be a coincidence, but maybe not, okay? But we got 2 minutes left, Dave.
The show generally sucks, Animal, and I just let you talk.
There we go.
Hey, there he is. Now, I just want to tell everybody, before they go to Jerry's after shows, a lot of people on the line, Jerry. I hope they stay on for
you. Sure there are.
My guest.
You say that every time.
My guest
is named
David Mandar on Twitter. He's at @DMANDAR. His company is called CURTA.ca, and you're in Canada, but you work with people across the continent. Is that right, Dave?
Global. I had a conversation with someone in Amsterdam last week.
Okay. you speak in Dutch. Okay, there's a lot of Dutch people in southern Ontario, okay? Now,
thank God you train those offshore Indian recruiters who call us all the time.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And also,
we did too. We got the
Dave
Indian recruiters
on
our
Dave and Rebecca. Dave and Rebecca Sargent, the wonderful Rebecca Sargent, they're having a Headhunter Summit. Headhuntersummit.com is the name of the website. It's in Niagara Falls. Fantastic on the Canadian side, which is even better, Niagara Falls. And that's October 3rd and the 4th. Is that right, Dave?
Correct.
Okay, of this year. And the great Stephen Nahez. I'm a fan of his. I know Mike Astringer isn't, but I'm a fan of Steve Nahez, a very witty, articulate, thinking recruiter.
That's why I don't call into the show anymore, because it became the spamming animal show when you started promoting Nahez.
He doesn't call in because of you, okay? So you're canceling each other out.
I wish you guys could bury the hatchet.
Yeah, okay, just like you and Jerry did. Okay, anyway, that's the end of the show. We're going on to Jerry. Dave.
Hey, see you guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh,
okay, roll call real quick. Who's here?
Greg, Kathy's here late, and I apparently missed a really good show.
Greg with two G's. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
How's life?
It's great. It's really good.
Super. Who else is here? Just real quick.
Mike from Brady.
Jerry, am I allowed to be here, or do I have to go?
You got to go.
Okay.
What?
Okay, bye.
Jerry, you changed the rules.
The rules fluctuate. Rebecca is tenacious, and so anything that would be brought up, she would disagree with. Like, I'm going to, in just a second, talk about how, no, you're not doing a 20-question questionnaire research of calling all kinds of people to find out about a company before you accept the job order that the guy's going to give you because you called them with a hot, placeable, fake candidate. Come on.
Well, I mean, there's no way.
Here, though, real quick. Mike Brandt?
Yep.
Who else? There's only three people?
No, there's a ton of people.
Hey, Stringer, are you here?
I am.
Who else? Come on, people, jump in.
This is Michael down here in San Antonio.
Yeah. Michael Cox?
Yes, sir.
All right.
That is the weirdest laugh I've ever heard.
Was that some kind of joke about?
Weird.
Anybody else with us?
Brenda, are you on?
LeBrenda. Okay, well, we'll just go with just us. Kathy, what'd you think?
I can't say anything. I just saw that I called in like just a few minutes ago, but it sounded like it was one of the best shows in a while, and I know that. Rebecca sounded great and really articulate, and it sounded lively and good. So
okay.
Let's just go on record as saying whenever I call in, it's one of the best shows ever.
That's what people are saying. I'm glad you're back, Mike. I've got to give
welcome
the show 95. It was great.
If we could just get you and Nahez back together, because he's an all right guy, man.
Well, okay. He can be a
might be an all right guy, but he's a hack when it comes to work.
Oh.
But we all have our own ways of scratching something out here, don't we? Come on.
Hey, it's working for him.
Yeah. I would say he's not scratching it out, he's rubbing it out.
Ow! Man! Goodness. Hey, Greg, Gregorian, how's life up there, man?
That's pretty good. I thought the guy was trying to sell himself as a sales/recruiting coach, but that he really didn't come across, he really didn't express that very well. Like when he talks about being in the boardroom, as if, oh, I'm in the boardroom with the HR. Like, okay, is this the board of the company that you're meeting with and the HR person's there and you're there too? You're there with the chairperson and the CEO? Or are you just in the office that is empty because the board isn't meeting?
Yeah, he's in conference room number two just outside of reception. I've been there myself. Oh, the boardroom. Better than the cafeteria, I guess.
I could see closing more business in the cafeteria, actually. A lot of stuff happens in those those things that just take place, you know, while you're in the halls, the cafeteria, or whatever.
There you go. Mike, what did you think about the show? Oh, Greg, go ahead.
I was just down in Texas, down in Houston. By the way, if you're in recruiting, I would just forget about everything else, go to Houston, because every staffing company we saw there is just like booming. I mean, they're just so hard up for people that I would have to think that a recruiter would do well, just in Houston alone. But,
yep.
Cox just say they're hard up?
No, that was the other one.
Brant?
No, that wasn't Brant.
Yeah.
Who was it? Who was he talking about, Houston?
Greg.
Me, it's Greg. Greg in Minneapolis.
Oh, okay.
So just walking into places, work for selling, recruiting. I was walking into a staffing company selling software and funding and whatnot.
One of my guys still drops in on all of his old customers. He does manufacturing recruiting. So he'll stop in and talk to plant managers and stuff. But in general, no, you can't just, like you're selling a vacuum cleaner or something, just stop in.
Can I answer that question from some experience?
Yeah.
So, you know, years and years ago when I worked for Manpower, I was the regional director of professional services on the West Coast, and then I moved east and had an equal level position, only it was on the staffing side of the business, which I had never worked in before or since. And for the short time that I was in that role, I would say that you can sell traditional, like clerical and industrial type staffing services door to door, but not recruiting services.
Cool. Okay.
All right.
Thanks for sharing that, Mike.
Point taken. Duly noted. The boardroom stenographer has noted that.
You know what I laugh at is, like, you know, people come on here with, you know, they're authoritative. Well, you know, I'm the shit and I can do this and I can do that. What really stuck my craw, and I should say that Rebecca's probably already on the phone booking a flight to come down here and beat my ass, but, you know, what got me was the whole, like, you know, sitting in on an interview. You know, I've been in recruiting for over 20 years on both sides of the desk. I have never seen a scenario where a third-party recruiter sat in on an interview.
That's ridiculous.
Let's face it. They're trainers, and they have to come up with some things that just sound like ballsy to get noticed. I mean, otherwise, they're a trainer, everybody's a trainer, and how do you separate yourself? So, you know, make some claims. They have to. It's the business they're in.
I don't like the fact that
they have that one time, and everybody remembers that one time, and maybe they're... He was maybe overstepping his bounds a bit and saying that it happens every time.
Could be.
Well, you know, Jerry, if you notice, the people that I bust their chops the most to come on the show are people, you know, recruiters have to differentiate themselves, too. We're all doing the same job at the end of the day, really. And, you know, it's the people that I bust their chops the most that come on and, well, I have this absolute superpower. So that was where he sort of opened himself up to my ridicule. The other thing is that I feel like he was on that show for an hour. And I still really don't have any idea what he is beyond the title of trainer, but I don't know what he does different or amazing or what his superpower is, other than he's so amazing that managers let him sit down in interviews.
He didn't back anything up with any numbers. I mean, at one point the conversation was brought to, you know, are you looking at the dollars or the transactions versus the, you know, building the relationships? I mean, it's all transactional. Sales is transactional. You may be able to improve the transaction with better quality, but it's all numbers.
Well, you can certainly have transactions within your relationship customer crowd, which is what I do. I mean, I've got relationships with a lot of customers, and then they need to hire somebody. And we recruit, and they hire somebody, and it's a transaction, and I send them a bill.
And that nonsense about not the dialing, about not calling somebody until you know everything there is to know about a company.
That's absurd. I'd get fired for that.
Yeah.
You know?
You could never make a phone call.
No, you
I
never would.
I think you should do something. You know, recruiters market to me via my clients all the time. And, I mean, I am a little annoyed when somebody calls me up and knows nothing about me at all, like what we're hiring for, what kind of company we are, what we do. I mean, I just spent 2 years at a company that hires lamp stack engineers that, you know, I get recruiters marketing Java candidates to me. So from that perspective, know a tiny bit about me. But, yeah, you're not gonna spend an hour researching a company for every call you make.
Okay, Mike, so then this guy, David, calls you. because he's marketing a candidate to start the conversation with you, and you like what he has to say, and so you say, all right, you're in. We need a software engineer. And he then says, okay, well, hold on. I'm not going to accept this search at the moment. I'm going to go now research you to see if you're a bunch of crap, and then maybe I'll call you back. See, I don't think that when you talk to a trainer for long enough, any trainer is going to not be caught in multiple contradictions. Him saying that he won't take a search assignment until he's fully researched a company, how is that possible if he's marketing candidates?
So you made two really good points there. Number one, the calls that I prefer from third-party recruiters are marketing candidates. Don't just call me and tell me about your superpowers at the end of the day. I don't know, Jerry, that you're any better recruiter than whoever. You know what I mean? You know that you've done a little bit of research. You at least know what I'm hiring for. Don't market me a candidate that's a Java engineer if I'm hiring for Ruby on Rails.
Right.
But so I've done that much. But I'll tell you what. If somebody called me and I said, yeah, your candidate sounds great, I'd like to have a conversation with that candidate, and you say, well, let me research your company and call me back, well, don't bother, lose my number. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, in Boston, where the market is really competitive, a lot of recruiters sort of have that attitude of, I'm going to decide whether I'm going to do business with you versus me deciding if I'm doing business with them, and it drives me insane, quite frankly. Like, people that come at me like that, I just, again, lose my number.
I have two interviews going on in Boston today, and hopefully if they pick one of those people, that'll be my second person. So I've got a couple contractors, hopefully by the end of the day, and I'm going to come to Boston for lunch. Let's see what it's like over there.
Uh-oh.
I need to get out of my basement, put some clothes on, get a haircut, all of it. I'm doing it all.
By the way, Jerry, I was surprised you did not get onto him in that call. He said he never looks at the client list of a company, and then he said he went to interviews. Got kind of.
Yeah.
I was surprised somebody didn't jump all over that one.
Well, that was what Mike was asking.
He was confusing his training versus his own working a desk. And Jerry, I'm sorry to have cut you off there, but I think that's the hugest conflict. And I'll give you a really quick example. There's a company in Boston who places contract recruiters. And that same company has a huge contingency practice. They pressure their contract recruiters that are on site at their clients to bring their contingency division into the mix. That's a huge conflict. And to me, somebody who's working as a third-party recruiter, working a desk, and doing training for other recruiting firms at the same time, like, how could there not be a conflict there?
Oh, we have a new way that we're scoring. I'm going to try something new. Instead of a score for the guest and a separate score for Animal, we're just going to do the entire show, all of it, one number.
Good.
Kathy, I want you to be the first.
Oh, gosh, I'm honored.
Yes, take your time.
I want Kathy to be my first.
Yep, take your time. Make it special.
95.
Okay, 95. All right. That's a surprising score. How did you come to that? You just liked it. You just
like
this. Mike's back.
I like it. I like that Mike's back. I like that the feedback on Twitter was really good. I could get a sense of what was going on. People said it was one of the best shows in a long time.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was great to have. It's great to have old people back, and it's good to hear good exchange of ideas on something that we're all interested in.
Super.
Let me just be clear that I'm not actually back. Believe it or not, and I know this is going to be funny, but believe it or not, I came to support Rebecca today.
Yeah, you sure did. I'm sure that she appreciated it.
Yeah.
All right, Mike Brandt.
I-60. I really they're supposedly training on sales methodology, and he didn't once get down that path the way I would like to have heard him. He couldn't sell himself.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That's a good reasonably thought out score there. A Stringer,
0 to 100.
I'm going to go to a 65, and my reasons are as follows. A good radio host can tell when a show is going well or not going well, and when their guests are engaged and not or I'm sorry, their listeners are engaged and not engaged. Animal seems to have been born without that gene because he thought the show was going great.
So did Cassie.
Well, Cassie thought it because I was there because we're in love with each other and we're having a secret affair.
All right. That's
good. So, and then, you know, I pretty much explained the guest. And let me just end my comments with saying, Rebecca, I apologize. I really did come to support you today, but I don't always have the best self-control. My wife tells people I have Tourette's.
All right. Hey, Greg. Still there?
I'd say 80, but, hey, A Stringer, it's just, you know, this notion that, oh, a recruiter can't also train because that's, you know, there's conflict of interest. I mean, you can't walk out the door without having some conflict of interest in the world. And the world's really big. You know, we've got more than 7 billion people. We've got huge economies all over the world now. It's a big place. And so it's just because somebody's training
Greg, is your work really your wife and your mistress and everything else that you said on Twitter?
You mean the quote on the bio?
Yeah.
Well, no, I'm saying this is some famous quote. I forget. I'm parodying another quote, but software is my wife, and software languages are my mistresses. I like to go after every new language that comes around. Yeah.
Okay, because I was a little concerned. Thank you for clarifying that.
Cassie, it could have been worse. He could have said his left hand is his wife and his right hand is his
Hey, hey. Seriously, come on, man. What is this, fifth grade here? Michael Cox, are you still with us?
Yo. Yes, sir.
what's your score here on this?
I'll say 65. I think the entire show went on a tangent with regards to him now being in the executive room and, you know, talking about how he was going to revamp an organization's, basically going in and covering their HR department and their turnover issues and, you know.
Yeah, that's a lot for a recruiter to go in there and do on a training mission.
And, you know, I've had those conversations here, and I keep letting people know, you know, recruiting and turnover are not exactly synonymous. We actually have these things called managers that affect turnover more than recruitment does.
Well, and also, I mean, I like to remind myself oftentimes that I'm really just a recruiting guy, and the other stuff is not my field. You know, I have no idea about a lot of the topics that I'm sure come up in the HR department that has nothing to do with recruiting.
Yeah, I can get you the candidate, but the way you treat them is up to you.
Yep.
Why should I be held responsible for piss poor management or your internal processes and all that crap?
You got it. Hey, anybody else? Anybody else want to chime in?
Yeah, I do.
Not you.
You know, we bashed the guest a lot, but he actually came on the show, and part of sales is just showing up. It's making the call. And he did that. So I think overall, that balances out maybe what I thought was a weaker performance.
All right. Yeah, gotcha.
It certainly helps.
And Animal must be
afraid
that I said he was born without a gene because he's bashing me on Twitter.
Well, Mike, you were lying. You were lying. You said you came to support Rebecca. The show wasn't even started yet. And you were tweeting, I came to see another failed recruiter who decided to teach instead of practice the trade. Right? Come on.
You know what, Animal? I don't respect or listen to the opinions of anyone who supports Nahez.
Well, Rebecca, who you said you came here to support, she hired him to train at her Headhunter Summit.
Yeah, he's one of the main trainers at her Headhunter Summit, dude.
Nahez is training people at that summit?
Yeah, and you know what? Everybody who knows you knows that you're just totally off your rocker with Nahez. You've got Nahez, you know, crazy syndrome.
We need to have
about that.
How about a Nahez A Stringer battle show?
Nahez doesn't want to have anything to do with A Stringer, and I don't blame him because Mike is not rational when you mention that guy's name.
I don't like him either. I'm
he's
sorry.
Freaking,
I don't like him.
Because he's
rude.
A freaking spammer.
I will not allow Nahez bashing. Come on, man.
Jerry, let me say one thing.
I want to say something else. I used to work with a guy who came out of Corn
Ferry. That's a lie right away. You've never worked.
Yeah, right. Out of Corn Ferry. He was out of Corn Ferry, one of the biggest international recruiting firms in the world. Started working on his own, and he had one of the clients that, you know, he used to be with there, the Swiss
Get
company.
Get to it!
A Swiss company called him. They wanted somebody for their plant in Mississauga, just outside Toronto. So he went
Everything
in there.
Is just outside Toronto. We learned that earlier.
Yeah, he consulted with him. He told him, you know, look, this isn't the kind of person you need. What you're looking for is this kind of guy. This kind of guy is the person who's going to do the job that you want for your company. And you aren't even considering all the things that you need. I'm going to tell you what you need. So he spoke to the GM. Just like Dave, my guest today, he did that. He had a consulting role, and he was a recruiter.
Do you know how much easier it is to be a recruiter who simply finds the person that your customer wants? Yeah, you promote these people who tell their customer what's going on and wrong. Your customer orders a pizza, you get them a pizza. You don't tell them they really need a ham sandwich and some curly fries.
That's because you don't have the guts to tell your customer.
I have a 25-year track record of not needing to have the guts to tell the customer they're wrong and serving them up what they ordered, man. The chicken strip basket. Transactions, baby.
Jerry, can I make a statement?
Yes.
I'm getting hungry.
I'm hungry, too.
For the first time in 10 years, I'm needing to put my resume out there because I have a consulting gig ending, and consulting work's been relatively slow for me this year.
Gotcha.
So no less than 30 emails I've gotten in the last week from quote-unquote recruiters who are using spiders to pull keywords off of resumes, and they're emailing me about positions that it says I have filled on my resume. So tons of Java developer, Ruby on Rails, et cetera, et cetera. So I email each one of them back, and I tell them off. In fact, I just now have a paragraph that I send back that basically tells them to F themselves and that they're spammers. I imagine Nahez doing the same thing. That's why I have a problem with Nahez.
All right. Hey, start asking those people, hey, sounds great, who's your customer? And see how many of them reply back with a customer name. Send it to me. I'll go in there. We'll get the job order, and I'll split it with you.
Well, part of my message, my message to them starts out with, are you sending me this because you want me to recruit it on it for you?
Oh. All right, guys, I've got placement paperwork to do, so I got to get rolling. Hope you all have a super-duper finish to your week. Go Pacers.
Animal.
Go Spurs.